Welcome everyone to another episode of the Chopped Liver Podcast. We are your hosts, Elise and Amay. And today we have a very exciting guest joining us, artist, master printer and collaborator, Claudia Rivett-Karnack.
Hello.
Welcome, Claudia. We are very excited to have you on the podcast today. We're both very big fans of what you do and the value you add to the printmaking world here in South Africa. So very, very welcome to you, and we're very excited to chat to you today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and thank you for being so excited about printmaking.
Printmaking is our main love, so I think whenever we get to talk to a printmaker, we just get
I get very, very giddy, because like I didn't study printmaking, and actually the reason why I know how to do anything about related to printmaking is because of Elise. So you're basically like a superstar guest for me specifically. You guys are trained printmakers, but I really appreciate the practice and the skills of printmakers, working with printmakers so closely at the David Crude workshop and so on. It's just such an amazing profession. I was thinking that last night, just, how do you, people that want to be creative, printmaking is like the most amazing thing that you can do as an artist and as a collaborator. So yeah, we want to talk more about that.
And well, you've been a printmaker now for about 17 years, which to us is just an amazing thing. Can you just tell us just generally your background, where you kind of fell into printmaking and why it became your love?
Great. Yes, printmaking is my biggest love and my complete obsession. So I took a year off after high school, and then I started studying fine art at Wits Technikon, and I think the very first time I walked into the printmaking studio, I fell in love. I opened those doors, and as I walked in, the smell of terps and ink and whatever other chemical hit me, and I had no idea what room I had walked into. So I walked into this room that was full of presses and these tables covered with glass slabs, and I said to my lecturer, "Sir, what is this? What do we do in this room?" And he said, "This, my dear, is where we do printmaking." And my eyes opened up wide, and I said to him, "Sir, tell me more." And yeah, that was my introduction to printmaking. And unbeknownst to me, my dad had already got me obsessed with printmaking from a very young age. Being born into a German family, the artist Albrecht Dürer was quite a big thing in the family. And my father had a lot of books of Albrecht Dürer, and he would show me his woodcuts and his etchings and his engravings. And every Saturday our family would sit together and have a little painting session where my father would choose an artwork by one of his favorite artists, and we would all try and reproduce that artwork. So, love of printmaking. The minute we started printmaking at university, I became hooked and I wanted to know everything about printmaking. So during my lunch breaks and during breaks between lectures, I would sit in the library and I'd look at every single printmaking book I could find on the shelf. And then from there, we got to end of second year, where you have to choose what you're going to major in. And printmaking was obviously the option for me. My whole entire third year work was based on monotypes. So I had a nice big body of work of monotypes. Fourth year, I again, for my BTEC exhibition, I majored in printmaking, and I had a really wonderful printmaking teacher, Vedant Nanak Chand, who was the head of printmaking at UJ, backed up by Kim Berman, who is the founder and director of Artist Proof Studio in Johannesburg. And at the end of my fourth year, Kim said to me, "Claudia, where to from here?" And being a fourth year, you kind of don't really know where you're going to go. Especially having an art degree, it's not really something where you can just go into a job, walk out of university and have a job from day one. So Kim Berman said to me, "Claudia, I've seen you with screen printing and you've worked on a project. So in fourth year, we have to do workplace learning or experiential learning. And I made a calendar for the University of Johannesburg where we took artworks made by fine art students, and we made a calendar out of that using screen printing. So Kim said to me, we have a non-functional space at Artist Proof Studio that could become the screen printing unit. Would you at all be interested in setting this up? So, I mean, obviously, I wanted to study at Artist Proof after studying at the University of Johannesburg. So what better way to get into Artist Proof than actually have a job there? So I got to work at Artist Proof Studio alongside Kim Berman and a whole bunch of really incredible printmakers. For those of you that don't know, Artist Proof Studio is a non-profit printmaking studio in Johannesburg that was founded in 1991 by Kim Berman, Professor Kim Berman. And it's a community printmaking space that encourages the love of printmaking, and it assists people who would love to learn printmaking who don't have access to tertiary education. It helps them to, well, we find funding for these people, and then they learn how to do printmaking, and they learn how to use printmaking to address social issues within their communities, and also to learn how to become entrepreneurs in printmaking. So printmaking becomes a medium of expression, of protest sometimes, and also of income generation. So I worked at Artist Proof Studio for 8 years, setting up their silkscreen studio, then becoming one of their collaborative professional printmakers in the pro shop, and also working in their education unit, teaching first, second, and third years how to do screen printing. And screen printing, to start off with, is it's quite a toxic printmaking medium. So all the original inks that were used for screen printing are solvent-based. And prolonged exposure to them can make people very sick. It can give you Alzheimer's, TB, all sorts of things like that. So I think a lot of people steered clear of screen printing simply because of that aspect. And then also there wasn't really much of an interest in screen printing within the fine art printmaking world in South Africa at the time where Kim invited me to join Artist Proof Studio. So that was part of the mission that she gave me. She said, Claudia, how can we make this unit a viable unit for the pro shop? Because the income that comes into the pro shop is used to fund the education unit. That's how we fund the bursaries for the students who come and study with us. So it was my mission to not only try make the unit a water-based unit, a more, like Sebastian said, you can't have a completely eco-friendly unit. Sebastian's my husband, sorry. But you have to try and find a way to make it more friendly. And because we were an institution, you can't be teaching students with toxic chemicals. I mean, you know, you've got to look after your students. You can't just not be worried about them. So that was a bit of a challenge. And then also the other challenge was to find artists and get them interested in screen printing. So look at the history of screen print artists in South Africa, and we have some very exciting artists like Norman Catherine, for example. But to try and draw those people in to Artist Proof Studio to want to collaborate with us. So that was really how the screen print, or the awareness of screen print started up. And with the help of Kim and the board of directors, we sort of did get that screen print up and running and create a lot of interest in it.
But I definitely see that connection where you're saying like screen printing wasn't like the favorable printmaking medium. Even when I was studying, so I was introduced to printmaking where it was just kind of monotypes, but then of course choosing printmaking as my major. But when we were choosing different kind of mediums to focus on, I mean, you had your intaglio class that was packed, but I mean, there are maybe only 8 or 9 of us with the screen printing. It really wasn't something that I think a lot of people saw the potential in it. And then even as the years went by, there were maybe just like 2-3 of us that were actually screen printing in our final bodies of work. And what I love about screen printing is that it's, of course, like many printmaking process can get very complicated, but I think it's definitely a medium that you can so easily translate image to kind of to a printable format. And once again, it's always that magic of squeegeeing that and having the image appear is always just so satisfying to see.
Yeah, I'm interested to find out if screen printing was your favorite printmaking medium or if it's something that you kind of fell into It's a hard question, and I don't know, we don't want to discriminate between different mediums, but, you know, it's so fascinating because you have your own studio, Chocolate Ink, and I believe that's mainly focused on screen printing. So is screen printing your favorite, or is it just that there was a gap and you've set up this facility and, you know, it's like going, finding the hole and going deeper down it, and the deeper you go, the, you know, the longer that tunnel gets. So yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
I think that's a really good question. Screen printing is incredibly daunting. Okay. As Elise was saying, it's not an easy process. And through the years, I've always had people phone me and say, listen, I have a very short deadline and screen printing is a quick, easy thing. Can you just roll out a whole edition for me in 24 hours? So people's impressions of screen printing are that it's quick and easy, but it's actually the opposite. It is a very complicated, intricate, but rewarding process like you cannot believe. And screen printing was not my favorite printmaking technique when I was at university. It was more of a convenience because you could quickly expose some text on a screen, which you could then put on top of your lino cut or on top of your etching. But when Kim said to me, here is this opportunity for you, please, we don't have a screen printer at Artist Proof Studio. Kim herself focuses more on intaglio, and she said, would I be interested in trying to develop the love of screen printing? So my love of screen printing developed through my job at Artist Proof Studio. And what was really interesting for me is the more I delved, the more research I did, the more obsessed I became with screen printing, because I find that with screen printing, there's no limits, there's no boundaries, except that you can't print on something that's spiky, okay? But otherwise, screen printing, you can print on any surface. There's ink made for printing on any surface. And you don't even have to just stick to ink. And that's where the name of my studio comes from, which I can explain a little bit later. But screen printing just opens a world of possibilities that I still haven't gotten to the bottom of. And I believe that I'll always be a student of screen printing, or a student of printmaking on the whole. I'll never master printmaking, if I can put it that way. And then the question of, is it my favorite printmaking technique? Well, I'm most certainly obsessed with it. And when I'm screen printing, all I can think about is screen printing. But when I go to my lino and I take out those tools, then all I can think about is lino cut. So I think I can very, very confidently say I'm obsessed with printmaking in every shape, form, color, sharpness, plates, matrix, everything. I'm just, printmaking is who I am.
I think we can definitely relate to that. And I think that's the answer I was hoping for, is that, printmaking in general is such an addictive medium and so versatile with all the different techniques that you can do. And the technique is determined really by your image, isn't it? Like it depends on what you want to do. I mean, I find that dry point and things actually work quite well for me because I love to draw, and if it's an illustrative style, maybe the quality that comes out in dry point is, to me, kind of puts it more in the fine art realm, where if I would translate that into screen printing, it's going to look more digital. So that's quite interesting about printmaking. And, you know, for those who haven't tried it, they should definitely do that and go explore, because it's such a spontaneous medium. Like, it always comes out so beautifully, even if you haven't put that much effort into it. And that's quite a beautiful thing. So that's the obsession, I think, is fascinating.
And I think having to choose your favorite printmaking medium is like trying to choose your favorite child. You know, it's like, you can't, like, I love them all equally and I hate them all equally. Like, there's always going to be something that draws you to the one, but there's always going to be something that frustrates you. Because I feel like that's sometimes to do with printmaking, is that, I mean, there's this saying that I see often, it's like, printmaking is great. It takes the most simple act of drawing and complicates it into the most extreme way possible. But it really is like, you just fall in love with all of them, because each one has its place. If you want to make something that's very graphic, screen printing is perfect for that. If you want to have more of a drawn line, dry point. And maybe it goes back to what we're saying, Sebastian's podcast is like that jack of all trades, because you fall in love with all of the mediums of printmaking and you just want to learn as much as possible from that. And as much as Amaya and I are going to disagree with you that you are not a master printmaker, We think you are. But I feel like what you said there is that you learn so much from printmaking continuously. You are always learning something new from printmaking. That plate's always going to teach you something different about wiping up. That one exposure is going to teach you something different about the timing, which is what I found the most difficult when I was learning screen printing, is that the timing and exposure just complicated. I feel like every printmaker, you're always kind of watching a clock. It doesn't matter what you're doing, if it's in the acid or exposure, you're watching a clock at some point. And no, it's a medium that I think anyone can easily become obsessed with. And once you're obsessed with the one, you want to become obsessed with the next one. But please do tell us more about the name Chocolate Ink, because we're so curious. Were you screen printing with some delicious things, perhaps?
Yeah, a lot of people ask me Chocolate Ink. It doesn't make sense. So firstly, I'm obsessed with chocolate. So if you want to be friends with me, just give me chocolate. Okay. And one of the rules at Chocolate Ink Studios, if you do come and work with me, there's always a bowl of chocolate and there'll be hot chocolate on offer. So chocolate is there. That's the order of the day. But the way the name came about is in 2010, I was invited to exhibit with on a group exhibition at the Art Club Festival. And the curator, Paul Bouletreau, the theme he chose was L'Origine du Monde, the famous painting by Gustave Courbet. And then the subtitle was, This is Not a Porn Song. And what we were asked was to say whether the nude figure in fine art, is it fine art or is it pornography? What is the line between that? And so I made artworks using chocolate body paint. So I soaked my paper in cocoa, a nice big mixture of cocoa in the bathtub. My bathroom smelled incredible. And by soaking paper in that, the paper took on the color of very intimate flesh. It had this really soft pinkish color to it. And then on top of that, I screen printed with chocolate body paint. The imagery itself was of a woman stripping. So it was a four-piece artwork of a woman. In each section, she had taken off more of her clothes. And I was saying that fine art or visual art sugarcoats the dirt of pornography. So with caster sugar, I screen print dusted caster sugar on her body. So wherever there was an item of clothing or an item of jewelry, that was dusted with sugar. And then the rest of her was printed with the chocolate body paint. So I was trying to create that contrast between good and bad almost. And then after that exhibition, people at Artist Proof started calling me the Chocolate Ink Lady for very obvious reasons. And I think it was actually Bevan DeVette who called me Chocolate Ink for the first time. Yeah, it sort of just caught on. So before that, I used to be the long haired lady. Now I was the Chocolate Ink Lady. And what came out of that project was I realized that I wasn't scared to experiment. Generally, printmaking is all about sticking to traditional rules. But with me, I realized that you can push the boundaries of printmaking. And that just opened up a whole new world to me.
I'm curious about those artworks. Were they sustainable? They don't need to be, but I'm just wondering if you screen printed with chocolate and caster sugar. Do they still exist, or were they like crumbling, or did they turn white? I'm sure they did. But yeah, what happened to those?
So the original artworks were obviously framed for the show, and my father bought them from me afterwards because he thought they were so beautiful. And what I asked him to do was to actually put them up on a wall in a room that got sunlight and everything, and because I wanted to keep track of how the artworks would develop over time. And I assumed that ants would come and eat it, or that it would get bleached. And up until now, so we are 11 years later, the cocoa powder has bleached, so the paper's not the same color. However, the chocolate body paint is still exactly the same color, and the caster sugar still sparkles as you walk past it. So up until now, they're still there. And then Gordon Froud also got a set of the edition as well. So he has another set, and I haven't checked in with him if they still exist. So.
But let's backtrack for a second and just speak about more of your beginnings. You said that you and your family, you sat around a table and you guys were painting and copying from masters or your dad's favorite artists. And you know, that's a fascinating process. I mean, what your works very much focus on ecology And just what are your inspirations, or other than that practice that was reinforced in your youth, which I just think is so wonderful, I'm pretty jealous about that. Yeah, what other inspirations and influences are there, and maybe something that gave you the confidence to kind of pursue fine art as a something that you wanted to go study, even though you knew you didn't know what you were going to do with it at the end of the day. That's quite beautiful that your parents or that your family encouraged that.
My parents have both been very, very encouraging of any skills that their children have had. And my father is a tour guide, so he has an affinity to nature that I haven't seen in a lot of people. And from when I was very young, he would take me outside, and during the day, he would sit me down in front of an ant nest, and he would say to me, "Claudia, look how the ants are walking, and look how they're cleaning up, and you mustn't hurt them. They're here for a reason." And at night, he would take me out on his shoulders, and he would say, "Now look up at the stars. Look at how beautiful everything is." And every time I spent any time outside with my father, he would teach me how to appreciate nature. He would show me the leaves of a tree, and he would say, "Look at how green they are and how they change in autumn, and look at the colors," or "Listen to the sound of the water as it runs over the rocks." So I've always had, I think, more of an obsession with being outside and being in nature than I am around people. And my mother, she was a very passionate, well, she is a very passionate person, an amazing cook. So she, in the kitchen, would teach me how to appreciate everything in the kitchen, and how when you bake, you have to measure everything. And I kind of sometimes feel like printmaking is a lot like baking. But yeah, in general, my parents always encouraged creativity. They were very creative. They are very creative people themselves. And so I think every time I'm outside, I stop and I look, and I'm always inspired by what I see. And I've been very privileged in my life to go on a lot of holidays and to go on a lot of hikes. My husband and I go on the Otter Trail every year. And apart from the Otter Trail, we hike wherever we go, and we take a lot of photographs. And when I say a lot of photographs, you do not want to see all of my external hard drives. They're a nightmare. But I have a lot of reference. And now the thing that's always bugged me is that I have all these beautiful photos of nature and of my experiences, but they sit on the computer or on the hard drive. So why not turn them into artworks? And that's really my inspiration. So after university, my work was still very conceptual, and I looked at animal rights and the destruction of the natural environment and stuff. But I felt that those works, although they were addressing a very pertinent issue, they didn't encourage anyone or make them feel happy. Whereas the artworks about the natural world that I experienced, people stand in front of them and they feel something beautiful when they stand there. So my focus has shifted onto the beauty of the natural world, or how I appreciate insects, for example. They are tiny, tiny little things, and most people don't see them. Most people will stand on them or, you know, remove them from the house. Whereas I take a moment and I actually look at them. And I appreciate the fact that I'm actually in their space, because before I came along, this was their home. So I try and show in my artworks that balance between man and nature and the appreciation of it.
Such a valuable lesson that you were taught growing up is just the act of looking. And that so much is something so important within any creative field, is acknowledging the space that you're in and truly looking at the things around you. And if your listeners think that it's an understatement that Claudia just goes and looks at nature, she did that exactly before our podcast. She just wandered into the garden by herself to go look at the lemon tree. And I love what you were saying there. It's like that shift that you had in your practice, kind of finding joyous moments to celebrate with people.
I just want to add to that, I admire very much like your approach to life as a learning process. Like, it sounds like everything that you take on and every encounter is a learning experience. Also, what you were saying is that you're not done learning about printmaking, and you know that it's a lifelong journey.
So curious to know like how the different types of learning, so you went for your learning printmaking through university and now from Artist Proof, but also the learning that you're doing in your own studio setup. I just want to know like the differences between like being a facilitator in an established print studio and how you've kind of taken that knowledge into your own personal studio and kind of the lessons that you've learned from being in your own space.
That's a good question. Obviously at Artist Proof, I learned so much. I think Artist Proof was the basis of everything. So yes, in university, you know, you kind of learn just the surface of everything. Your lectures will give you a brief and then say, go to the library and do some research. And you only scratch the surface, literally, you with your dry point needle or your etching needle. But having to collaborate with artists at Artist Proof Studio, now that is a serious learning experience right there, because very similar to Sebastian's podcast, you can't push what you think or what you've learned onto the artist. You have to let them live and breathe their own idea, and then from there you have to take their idea and you have to problem solve it to give them the most beautiful artwork possible, something that's very successful. And at Artist Proof Studio, I had that support system of the pro shop. So I think there were about 5 of us in the pro shop. So we had the manager, and then we had the different collaborating printers or master printers. So Bevan would be in the intaglio section, Matsumai in the lino cut section, Ponso in the lithograph, and then me in the screen print. And, you know, you could always bounce ideas off of each other. But when I opened my own studio, I was very much alone. But because I had such excellent training at Artist Proof Studio, I went straight into my own business with that exact same sort of ethos in mind. And then I also had an incredible partner, Sebastian. My husband, who is just, I don't know, he's a well of information. And whenever I'm trying to problem solve and there's something that doesn't make sense to me or that's not logical, I just run it past him. And within a few seconds, he says, but why don't you just do this? So my learning experience has continued on in my own space, learning together with my husband how to do things. And then also I have another well of knowledge, Rudy from Chemisol. Chemisol is our silkscreen supply company. And Rudy is, I mean, he knows so much about screen printing. He's 87, so he's got a lot of experience in screen printing. And he also, you can phone him at any time of the day and he will help me when there's new things I'm trying to do. And the one thing that I've really enjoyed having my own studio where I can collaborate with people is that I advertise myself as an experimental printmaker. So I've had artists who come into my space who have gone previously to other studios and have said, look, I want to do this. And the studio says, sorry, you know, we don't do this because it could damage our equipment or whatever. So I'm not saying that I'm happy to damage my equipment. I'm very precious about my presses. But I'm also very willing to try and find ways around that and to create artworks using techniques that people don't generally do. So in terms of learning experience, having your own studio is the best thing I could have done. And I continue to learn every single day. And when you have someone as clever as Sebastian with you, then it's, you know, you're very, very lucky.
It's so wonderful to just... for you to exert such love for your collaboration partnership with Sebastian as well. And you guys are really a force, it sounds, to be reckoned with in developing your guys' different loves for each other. And just to refer a little bit back, the podcast prior to this one was with Sebastian on his practices. So if you guys missed that one, just go and listen to that. But you were speaking now a lot about collaboration and, you know, again, with your guys' collaboration, like it's such a strong element in your printmaking practice. And, you know, why are you so drawn to that? Like, what is so special about collaboration?
Collaboration is a challenge. I think if you want to sum it up in a very simple way, collaborating with someone is all about problem solving. It's about having someone in your space who has a vision, but they don't technically know how to produce that, or they've only had a little bit of experience, for example, in screen printing. So they know the basics, but they would like to create an edition that'll blow people away. They want to create an edition that has to be flown overseas next week and They just want people to understand and to feel the vision that they have. So, for example, I worked with one artist who uses 100% pure lapis lazuli in his artwork. But now how do you screen print with that? Because lapis lazuli is crushed semi-precious stone. How do you pass that through a screen? So I spent about a month busy experimenting, seeing how I could pass that pigment through a screen, how we could get it to sit on the paper that he uses, and how to make it archival, how to make it last. And that's where collaboration comes in, where I speak to Sebastian, for example, I speak to Rudy at Chemisol, and then the three of us brainstorm how to deal with this specific project. But even more than that, what I love so much about collaborating with artists is that I get to see the artwork before anyone else. Now, that is incredible in itself. So that artwork is being created in my space. You're literally giving birth to your artwork in my space. And I'm there. I'm the midwife. I'm there to help you, you know, along the way. And I think just the fact that an artist trusts me so much with their baby or with their artwork is such a compliment in itself. And I don't think there's anything else on this planet that is such a big compliment, that someone will come to me and will say, right, we know that you have the skill. Can you sit with us? Can you work with us? And they also trust me enough that when I look at their work and they say, I want this work to be purple, and I look and I say, maybe you should look at doing it green instead, that they say, okay, well, if you can do a test print for me in the green, that they will give me that space to give my suggestion, so that at the end of the day, we really have a beautiful artwork. So yeah, collaboration is it's incredible. Sorry, I don't really have the words to describe it.
It's incredibly rewarding. And, you know, that artist that you worked with the lapis lazuli, just to contextualize for listeners, obviously was William Kentridge. And, you know, that is something really incredible. I mean, those works, I don't know if there's anyone who is in the art world who collects who has not seen some of these lapis lazuli artworks, these text pieces that you guys done. And I'm just wondering, like, how much lapis lazuli was there?
A lot. Whenever I had to get the lapis to work with, it had to be shipped in from Venice, and it would arrive in this beautiful little package. And I'm quite a precious person about anything, packaging, gifts, and so forth. So I would even keep the little containers that had the lapis in it. So once it was finished, I would very gently wash the container, put it back in the box, and return it back to William, because it was just such a mind-blowing project all on its own. And just as a little side bit, lapis is my favorite semi-precious stone as well. I have a nice big one that I wear around my neck in summer. It's beautiful. And the one day I was wearing it, and William said, should we crush that one as well? So
how rude.
Yeah, I know. It's mine.
Yeah, it's how rude. How rude to have you use that for your artwork. But oh, that's a wonderful. It's so interesting, because that's so meant to be then, that project. Mm-hmm. Like, and wondering how that project came about. Just because the lapis is your favorite, and then William, and then.
Well, I first collaborated with William at Artist Proof Studio. It was a surprise from Kim Berman for me. The one day she walked into my screen print unit and she said, Claudia, I have a special project for you. And I had absolutely no idea. She says, I want you to be prepared. We're going to someone's studio. You might be a bit nervous, but I'm not going to tell you who it is. And so we drove into this beautiful garden. And when we got to the gate, I already saw the cats on the gate. And that's when I started getting nervous. But we drove in and we walked into William's studio, and I don't know, my legs turned to jelly. And yeah, I was very, very, tearing up and all of that. But, you know, that's not what a professional artist wants to see. They don't want to see a collaborator who's all jelly and weak at the knees. So I composed myself with the help of Kim, and we walked in. And he said to me, hello, Claudia, it's nice to meet you. I've heard about you. Kim suggested we work together, and I have these red texts that I would like to screen print onto these book pages from old encyclopedias. And then he gave me, so he always hand paints his not test, like the prototype first. So he gave me a prototype and he said, would you be able to turn this into an edition for me? So, you know, very calm and collected. I said, oh, I'll try. and then got straight onto the project. And the first thing that we had to figure out was William needed me to soak the book pages because now they're from the 1800s sort of thing. So they're very dirty and dusty. But how do we soak the book pages without losing the information on them? So did a lot of experiments, and my whole unit at Artist Proof had these water trays and we were soaking paper. Anyway, to cut a long story short, we got soaking right. Then it was, what ink do we use? And again, I found the correct sort of color that he was looking for, and we soaked the print because we wanted to see now if this print would last, because William said that some collectors would want to remove the print off the backing page, which means it would have to be soaked. So lots of soaking tests. Now the long story short, everything was successful, worked, and William was super happy with that. So that was the project I did for Artist Proof Studio. And then when I opened Chocolate Ink Studio, I opened in Maboneng, which was just down the road from his studio. And one day he knocked on the door and came in to see my space, which was great. And then he said, well, it looks like you've got a good space here. We'll do some more work in the future. And then one day he contacted me again.
I mean, you really are a master at your screen printing. So it's makes total sense that someone as established as William can come to you. And like you said, it's very much with that whole nature of collaboration, it's very much that trust factor in it. Artists are very sensitive and very precious about their ideas and what they're making. What's so beautiful about the history of printmaking is its collaborative nature, and where the printmaker is that facilitator in helping, like you use the word perfect, like that midwife to kind of bring these artworks into the world. But what I really appreciate about your entire kind of studio practice is that experimentation. Like you were saying earlier, it's like you'll have artists go to other printmakers and be like, oh no, we don't really want to kind of test those limits a bit. And I found that frustration a lot with a lot of industries, where as you are as an artist, you'll often go to manufacturers or designers or people and be like, I want to do this. And they were like, no, that seems like far too much work and testing. And you kind of just get blank looks of just being like, no. The reluctancy from so many people who don't understand a creative process, I find that very frustrating. Your openness to experiment and your openness to try things, I think, is such an amazing like superpower that you have. And I think it sets you so apart from other collaborative printmakers, because it's not just being like, oh no, my machine can't do that. It's very much like, okay, there might be some problem solvings that we need to do, but there's so much potential if we get this right. That also links to your eagerness to learn. And understanding that printmaking is a constant learning experience. And often with, I guess it comes back to that good old quote, it's like, know the rules so that you can break them. Printmaking is the perfect medium for that. Yes, you can have your hard ground etching and you can put it in your acid and you know it's going to work. But what if we try this? But what if we try this to make a mark? That's why so many artists are so eager to work with you, and it'd be such an honor to work with you, because you have this wealth of information of experimentation to like tap into that information that you have, and makes that collaborative process so much more exciting, because artists know that you're willing to kind of go that extra mile of, like you said, spending months to kind of crush that stone and to get it to kind of go through a press. And that I just admire so much, just the resilience of experimentation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very curious to find out how you select the artists that you work with, or do they select you, or is it a combination of both?
So I don't select my artists. People select me. So I think that was one thing I wanted Chocolate Ink Studio to be, is I didn't want it to be a closed studio. Because coming from Artist Proof Studio, there are a lot of young artists who don't have that list of all the group shows that they've been on or solo shows. So they don't have that backing where I'll say, oh, well, because if your work doesn't sell, I'm not going to have you in my studio. I wanted a space where people can fall in love with printmaking. Where if they're a little bit unsure of printmaking because they're still a young artist, I can instill that passion in them and just make them another addict. I mean, that's what printmaking is about. And printmaking is a very democratic medium. It's about sharing, right? With other techniques, you can't really share as much as you can with printmaking. So because my studio was or is an open studio, it's artists come and find me. And it's always by word of mouth that artists come to me.
That you have an open studio kind of policy is so wonderful, because I think when I was first introduced to printmaking, it can sometimes feel very intimidating, because you need such a wealth of knowledge to approach printmaking. It can be very intimidating. And I really love your approach to kind of wanting to share, wanting to educate. Education has formed such a strong core in your entire practice. I mean, with your lecturing and the workshops that you offer, even with you're one of the amazing administrators of the Printing Girls, for example, and you're thriving and growing such a supportive community for printmaking. And I find that is so valuable and so needed. But what I wanted to kind of touch on is, like, why is that element of education and that skill share and that desire to share, why is that important for you? And why have you kind of made that a core aspect of your practice?
So for me, the element of sharing is, I think it's intrinsic of who I am. I've always felt that if I learn something, I have to pass that knowledge on. I can't keep it to myself. So I think at university, very often when I felt like I needed help, I didn't know who to ask, because the answer was generally go to the library and read a book. And as a student, I felt that when I learned how to get around that issue or I problem solved something, I would let the rest of the class know how to do it. So I was also the class rep, so I was sort of in charge of looking after everyone. And whenever we got stuck in some way, I would go and do the research and then share that information. And that is obviously something that's very much encouraged at Artist Proof Studio as well. It's printmaking is something that you share. It's more than just an art medium. It's a way of life. And if we look at our history of South Africa, printmaking was a way of communicating during the bad times. We used posters to communicate. So people would print resistance posters at night, anti-apartheid posters, etc., and they would put them all up in the streets at night. So that in the morning when people woke up, there were these messages of resistance. There were these messages of hope, of encouragement. And then the police would come and tear down all the posters. And then the very next night, all the posters were back up again. So I think in our country itself, we have printmaking has so much power. And you have to share. You have to share this knowledge and these things. And also, I think that by sharing knowledge, I learn more. You know, because I'll tell you something and then you'll say to me, oh, you know, that really helps. But do you know that I've figured out a different way to do that? So sharing just creates an element of family, and it creates it creates a strength, and it creates a bond. And, you know, you don't want your knowledge to die down. I mean, you don't want to something happen to you and then no one knows the secret of how to print lapis through a screen, for example. So I'm a very open and communicative person in terms of sharing my knowledge. And I think that does need to be encouraged, because I just feel that for me, art is not it's not an introspective thing. I've always had this problem where I feel that art generally is about the artist themselves and how they feel. Whereas for me, I feel that art is a way to enhance the community, to address social issues, and just to make people stronger in general. So sharing comes along with that. It's like a hand-in-hand thing.
I think we both, Elise and I both, share that kind of perspective on sharing. And I think in a country like South Africa, it's very enabling for people who want to learn, when we have so many things that obstruct learning in this country in particular. There's just so many things that where people can't access learning, or we don't have free education necessarily. So just people's ability and want to share, just willingness to share what they know is such a positive and valuable contribution that you could make in a community like ours. So that's just wonderful. But other than a collaborative printmaker who gives so much of herself, you know, to other artists, and you obviously find great value in that, and it's very inspiring to you, I can tell. But how do you make time for your own artistic practice? You're an artist in your own right, and obviously trained. And where does that fit in between being a printmaker, working with all these other artists, and just making your own work?
Yeah. Weekend? What weekend? So, yeah, public holidays and weekends don't apply in our family. Both my husband and I work seven days a week. And we don't sleep much. So we, you know, when we're supposed to be taking time off, so let's say when the studio is closed for the day, then we will move on to our own project. So we will constantly be working on our own things. But I must say that obviously working with other people can be a bit draining at times, especially because you are using all of your knowledge and your skills to enhance somebody else's artwork. So when it comes to the end of the day, I often find myself very drained. And the way that I recharge those batteries is by going on a hike or going for a walk. We're very lucky to have a reserve close to where we live, so we'll just say that's it, we're going for a walk in the reserve. And I think that recharging moment of being out in nature is what gives me enough energy to then make my own artwork. But at the same time, I'll very often feel tired when I take out my lino cut and I've got a headache, and I'll say I can't do this. And the minute that blade touches the plate and I glide through that plate, everything's gone. I'm back into my element and I can just carry on working and working. And then again, I keep referencing Sebastian, but he'll see that. He'll pick up on that moment where I've gone back into the space of creating, and he'll make me a cup of tea and he'll make me a sandwich and he'll bring me a piece of cake. And so again, I think it's that collaborative aspect of having a partner who understands exactly what you need, and he understands that you need that time and that space to make your own artwork.
I think also what you're saying is just the support system that you have in your family life is also very enabling for you to produce your own work. And what's really fascinating about your print studio, the way that you work, the way that you've learned of support, one thing that we have spoken about is how many artists don't become artists after they study. They go in a completely different direction. And I think a lot of that has to do with the lack of support, the lack of feeling like you can do it, because you've got all this critical feedback when you're studying and you've got people behind you and you've got people saying your work is crap or it's good or it's mostly crap, but it's, you know, it's okay. You can keep going and you've got a studio to work at. And then you stop and like you were saying as well, you didn't have an idea where you were going to go. Luckily, Kim came and said, oh, cool, let's do a project. But it would be very interesting to know where you would be if you'd be in the same place as you are now, if that opportunity hadn't presented itself in the form of her believing in you, wanting to support you. You had something to offer. And I think that just a comment, and I don't know if you also want to comment on this, is just that it's fascinating the things that are forming in South Africa, or in this particular case, the print collective. Studio spaces, I think, are very essential to artists going forward in their careers. Just enabling artists to work. And in a country like South Africa, where art making is still very young, I mean, we still have, even in our galleries and how collectors purchase, there's so much room for other mediums and things to come in and to be actually acquired as art, or to be invested in the sense of not wanting to make your money back, but believing in an artist-specific practice like sculpture, for example, I think is still very much undervalued in this country. So I don't know if you want to make a comment about that and how artists can remain artists through such structures.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very important thing to talk about, because all of us that studied at a tertiary institution, you have that big family and you have the sort of the grumpy dad lecturers who say it's not good enough, and then you have the moms who comfort you afterwards. But the minute you leave university, you are so isolated and you are so lost, because you no longer have a brief, right? You no longer have someone saying you need this by this point in time, and you have to hand in a like progress artwork halfway through so we can see are you on the right track or not. So for me as well, even though I worked at Artist Proof Studio immediately after studying, I stopped making art. because I started making other people's art. And I kept telling myself that was okay. I was still making art. But really inside, I felt lost. And I felt like I'd almost betrayed myself because, hey, I studied to be an artist and I'm not making my own work. So thank goodness for Kim that she did that. And I think Kim is someone who really does see that in people. She watches you as a student and she will provide you with the community. And for me, the Printing Girls is very much, and so the way I contribute to the Printing Girls is inspired by Kim and the way she has trained me in the years that I have known her. And yes, collectives, collaborative groups, open studios, I think is the way for us to go, especially now during lockdown. So before lockdown, the Printing Girls, we would have social gatherings. So for example, my workshops, I host them once a month on different techniques. So I'll start with your sort of easier techniques, and as we work through the year, we work up to the more difficult techniques. And before lockdown, that was our highlight every month. The Printing Girls would get together at my studio and we would just have a blast. I mean, we would be making art, we would be learning, we would be talking, we would be giving each other constructive criticism and support. And when lockdown hit, that kind of all went away. So the Printing Girls last year felt quite isolated, and we were still trying to figure out Zoom and WhatsApp video calls and all these things. We didn't really know where we were going with that. And this year, the focus for the Printing Girls was to up that feeling of the community again. So that's why we started the Zoom support sessions. And then when we had a lighter lockdown level, we had a picnic in the reserve where we brought gel plates and we just made artworks in the reserves using leaves and feathers and whatever we could find, because there is that feeling of community. And this week I just finished my first full online workshop with the Printing Girls. It was an absolute success and everybody has been so, so grateful, because I would have had to have cancelled that workshop. And now I had the Printing Girls ready to make work for our up-and-coming show, and that had to be cancelled. So we've also tried to adjust and make sure that our communities are still alive, even though we're in lockdown. And I can see how the members of the Printing Girls are thriving in that community, in that shared space. And within that shared space, there is, again, the sharing of knowledge, the teaching. And that brings me to the workshops. My workshops are my biggest obsession. So printmaking is my biggest obsession, but teaching printmaking, oh my goodness, that really gets me going. I love it so much. So yeah, I agree with you. The idea of having a community and a family is really what keeps us going.
I love it. You're just converting more and more people to like the realm of printmaking. And I think that happens quite often. I mean, I've seen it from like the artists that aren't printmakers that come out of the Day Recruit workshop. They might have done printmaking during university, they're introduced to it, but like, no, I'm more of a painter or I'm more of a sculptor. But then I think when they're under the right guidance and with people that are really there to support them and really nurture their practice, you convert them very quickly into kind of wanting to be printmakers, because I feel like they land up seeing it as not nearly as scary as what it seemed in the beginning. Because I often, like you said, you walk into that print studio and like same response was like, this is home. I don't know what this is, but I want to play with all these toys. I want to play with the acid. I want to pretend I'm a scientist, but make art at the same time. And with people who aren't automatically excited by that environment, I think it is very intimidating. And I think when you're under the facilitation of someone like yourself, and I mean, even with the wonderful printmakers at the David Crute workshop, is that you're kind of given the tools just to play around with the printmaking and kind of see that even with, like, for example, with monotypes, it's a wonderful entry into printmaking. It's like, it's not nearly as scary. And I think it's in there you kind of just slowly convert them to the side of printmaking, and then they just abandon all other mediums and come to our side.
And I can definitely feel the energy of the Printing Girls, which is ironic, but it's just explodes through social media. Like every single person sharing that exhibition post or sharing that activity, I think there's something to be said for the way that you guys have adapted, you know, in lockdown and online. And it really inspires people that even aren't a part of your group, I think, to just carry on and produce. And, you know, it's great to see that these things are happening and that people are being able to adapt to online, because it opens up so many more possibilities for other people to just continue their practices. But just to get back to you for a minute, I think, you know, it's so fascinating what you're saying about your workshop being an open workshop and that anyone can come and work with you. And, you know, you really referred to as a master printer. And maybe just to explain to people like what that means, like what is the difference between a master printer, a printmaker, a printer, you know, and it maybe you're going to be a bit flashy about it. But I think that it's really something that an audience would like to understand.
So generally, if you meet a master printmaker, they don't like to introduce themselves as a master printmaker. We like to call ourselves professional collaborating printer, because I don't know, it being called a master printmaker almost makes you seem like someone who's better than everyone else, and we most certainly aren't. Generally, you'll find that we're very quiet, humble people who like to hide behind our presses. And that's where we like to be. So we don't like to be in the spotlight. We like the artists that we work with to be in the spotlight. So to explain what we do is we excel in our skill of printmaking. So in my case, screen printing is what I've really, really focused on. That's been my training. So anybody who wants to make an artwork in screen printing can come to me with the most crazy idea, and I will look at it and I will be able to break it down into workable parts to turn it into a screen print. And I can guide the artist in the direction they should go. And then the way I work as a collaborating printmaker is I adjust to the needs of my artists. So some artists will come with an almost complete artwork, but they won't know how to edition it. So then I will help them to edition it. Other artists will arrive at my studio with an idea in their head. So nothing on paper at all. And I will sit and we will work to get that idea onto paper and then take it from there. So each artist requires a different form of interaction from me itself. So, master printmaker is, so let's just call it, we just know we're very good at what we do. And we are passionate about helping you fall in love with that printmaking technique or that skill. And we are there to guide you through the way. But we also don't like to take the credit. it's very difficult. So I think our biggest reward being a collaborating printmaker is that we are entitled to a printer's
Yeah. So I think, you know, you were touching on how humble master printers are, and definitely in your answer, there is definitely that. I don't think it's difficult to talk to yourself or talk about yourself as someone who is so skilled in what they do. And I did do some research about this, asking other master printers and printers what they thought it was. And I mean, ultimately, it's having that breadth of knowledge and those years of experience and printmaking, a practice that's developed over years and years and years and years. So you get printers that are working in studios with facilitating learning. I mean, Elise was also telling me, and I know in our studio, like for the first 2 years as a printmaker coming in from university, you're going to be tearing paper, you're going to be, I don't know, cleaning rulers, I don't know what you do, but you're not printing, you're not collaborating with artists.
You're beveling a lot of plates.
You're beveling plates, you know, and building up to that status in a way, as we call master printers, exactly what you said in very humble ways, looking at what you need to do, breaking it down into those components and making it achievable with all of the knowledge that you have. And there's a reason why people are coming to you for screen printing. Difficult works, you know, so I think that's interesting. And I mean, a term that's often misunderstood, you know, by people who are not learning, like printmakers are artists who make prints. So there are three levels of that. And I think that that's just fascinating to understand.
It kind of boils down to is that experience. like where you are now, where you have those 17 years behind you of experience and muscle memory, where an artist can come to you and ask you, I want to do this. And you're like, okay, I have a reference point for a project I did 10 years ago.
No, I basically have a black belt in printmaking. Yeah, so I mean, I think that we could end on that glorious note. And it's been such a pleasure hearing your thoughts and hearing your tremendous history in printmaking and how it all came about. And we have a collaborative doodle challenge for this episode, where we will be posting a image on Instagram, which people can screenshot and share and distribute and add to that image of an ecological subject matter. So we'll be putting that up and we'd love to see the images. But Claudia, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for making time, and we definitely have to come and visit your studio. And yeah, can't wait to see what's coming about at Chocolate Ink in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time. Bye.
For more information on the platform, visit our website, choppedliversociety.com, and like us on Facebook and Instagram. And bring your friends.
And this podcast was produced by Jonathan Bell at Bell Studios in Johannesburg.